Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, December 13th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and look for the two words start here in the upper left-hand corner, if you click on that, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. From that page, you can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file where you can just click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that worksheet process. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they do that. It also tends to promote comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we appreciate it if you give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone, and that will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And then we can have a conversation. Area code 828. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Decide what you can handle. Determine what ways you want to celebrate and what traditions you're comfortable carrying on.
Area code 828. Is this an accidental pressing of the number 1? All right. I will mute you, and we'll assume that while you may be listening, you did not intend to press 1 to raise your hand. So we'll return to the flow of the show, whatever that might be for today. I realized that as I was getting ready for today's show that we have gone through the review of Lesson 31, and so now we can either have a discussion or we can move on into reading Lesson 32. It's fascinating to me the number of people that comment about the way things make them feel. I just had it happen again in a session. I had someone who's been working with me quite a bit, has found tremendous benefit in the tools, and the tools are based on the observation that we choose our experience of life. We choose where we focus our mind energy, and that is what creates our emotions. And yet, despite having worked with me for years and sharing this work with others and basically having become known as a teacher in his own right, this person sat in the session and told me of meeting someone from his past and said, you know, it was sad. It was sad. And I said, how so? And he told me the thoughts he was using to generate the emotion of sadness. And so we worked with it a little bit, and I tried to share with him a whole series of other thoughts that he could choose, that if he chose to do that, they would not generate sadness. They might generate appreciation. They might generate joy, relief. They might generate fond memories of nostalgia, but not sadness. And it's all done through the application of our mind energy. And it's all done by us so automatically because we've been trained into it that we don't even recognize we're doing it. Even when we've been studying a different way. We've been trying a different way to live our life. We've been practicing the idea of working with our thoughts to create certain specific results. The automatic process that kicks in is so powerful that we don't even notice it. And this is why we work so sometimes diligently in sessions, and I know that I work diligently in my own life to capture those moments where my old conditioning kicks in and gives me an auto response to something that has many different options that could be seen as positive, they could be productive, and time after time, the one my brain chooses is negative. So, you know, the core of the work I do with people is the basis of what we talk about here on Mind Shifters Radio, we do in the support groups, is the recognition of how actively we are creating our perception of life moment to moment. And that includes each and every emotion that we experience. Now, in the last few lessons of The Way of Mastery, it's been talking to us about paying attention to what we value, what we trust, what we will hold loyalty for. And one of the things that comes out of this experience we just had in the session is that there's such momentum to the old thought patterns and the old sets of conclusions that unless I'm vigilant, unless I actively work to choose again and choose differently, that old pattern will kick up, kick in, and run its course. And I'll be left experiencing a flow of thoughts that I pour my mind energy into, which create an experience for me that's like lots of other experiences I've had in the past. And then I'll wonder, wow, why does my life stay the same? Why do I meet the same kind of people? Why do I have so much anger? Why am I always depressed? Why am I so fearful? If I don't understand that so much of what I experience, so much of my thought pattern is automatic, so you might say predetermined by my past, if I don't understand that, then I don't maintain the vigilance for my thoughts, because why would I watch for something if I don't expect it? I won't. I won't watch for something unless I expect it. If I train myself to understand the power of habit and the power of the momentum that is running in any old thought pattern, then I use my mind energy in the moment to scan for any indication that my mind has gone toward the negative. And I realize I have a choice. Again, this is the core message in this work. I've mentioned before how I was doing a talk at a Unity church about, and they asked me to talk about the first, I think it was the first five lessons of the Way of Mastery. And I thought, wow, there's so much in this. What should I talk about? And oh, I thought, hey, I'll talk about choice and how we have choice. And then I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll just go to a few places in the book where they use the word choice and build my talk out of that. And I had a Kindle, and so I did a word search in the Kindle on just the first lesson in the Way of Mastery. I'm sorry, not the first lesson, the first 12 books, the Way of the Heart. In just that first 12 books, if I remember correctly, there were over 90 or over 100 different references to the word choose or choice. So the theme of this whole teaching is that we have choice. We have not been taught that we have. We have the ability to create our experience of life in ways we have not been taught. And if we aren't taught that we something important, we don't know it's there, then we can't exercise it. We can't work with it. So what are you choosing? Well, in the last lesson, it had us go very, very carefully and take a look at what are we choosing to value? What are we choosing to value in terms of trust and loyalty in our lives? Which powers, which dynamics, which perceptions in our lives are we giving value to? And we're invited on a regular basis through this work to pay attention to that and to question, okay, are we choosing to value and place our loyalty and trust in a fear-based thought or in a love-based thought? Whatever we choose, we will create results like that choice, because whenever we're working with a tool, we will always get results like the tool we're using. So, lesson 32 is titled, The Longing of the Soul is to Know Love, capital L, Love. And the text reads, Beloved and holy friends. And of course, we want to slow down and remember, because in our culture, we're taught to judge one is higher, one is lower, one is better, one is worse, one is good, one is bad, one is right, one is wrong. And so many of these lessons start out with this little reminder, we are all equal. We are all friends. We are all just walking each other home. No one is higher or lower than you. You are not higher or lower than anyone else. And that in itself is a lifetime of learning, because we've been programmed to the opposite. It comes to mind, I was working with somebody on the internet show a few years ago, and she had such low self-esteem and negative self-talk and self-loathing thoughts running through her head that I gave her the targeted journaling work to do, to write on the left-hand side of the paper that there has never been nor will ever be a person born on the planet who has more value than Michelle. So that was the mind shifter. That was the targeted journaling. Write that on the left and then spend an hour or more just responding to this statement. There has never been nor will there ever be a person born on this planet who has more value than Michelle. And she came back a day or two later and said, well, I couldn't do that because I don't believe I'm better than anyone. And the auto-programming in her mind was so powerful that even though there's nothing in that statement saying she's better than anyone, her mind interpreted it as, oh, I can't do that work because that would mean I'm better than somebody. And, of course, the point of that statement is we're all friends. We're all the same. We're all walking each other home. And this lesson 32 starts with, beloved and holy friends, we are equals. We are joining with you where you are. The text reads, we come forth to speak yet again of the essence of all that you seek and all that you are. All that you seek and all that you are. This is reminiscent of the quote from St. Francis of Assisi, who says, what you are looking for is what is looking. What you're looking for when you say you want to know God, when you want to get closer to the holy man or the guru, is what you're looking for outside of you is the essence of life that's giving rise to you. Beloved and holy friends, we come forth to speak with you yet again of the essence of all that you seek and all that you are. Whatever you're seeking, you already are it. The text goes on and says, with great devotion and with unceasing praise, we share with you that which alone can set creation's offspring free, that which alone enlightens the mind, purifies the heart, and brings about the serenity of the soul. What then could such a subject be? What theme could all of these words point to? Indeed, what does the morning sunrise point to? What does the sound of a child's laughter point to? Beloved friends, what does the very breath you breathe point to? What do all the things of creation point to? For I have said unto you, before there is nothing you can create that does not require or express your longing to awaken. I have said to you, there is nothing you can create that does not express your longing to awaken. Therefore, all of the doing of the body-mind is but the attempt of the soul to break free of all limitation and to once again rest or recline in that perfect peace, which is the certain knowledge that only love is real. When you rest in the knowledge that only love is real, and you awaken to the realization that you are the extension of that loving energy in form, then what you are looking for is what is looking becomes your internal knowing. So, what is it that we're talking about here? What is it that with great devotion and unceasing praise, we want to share with you that which alone can set you free, that which alone enlightens the mind, purifies the heart, and brings about the serenity of the soul? And what could that be? What could the subject be? What could the theme be? What could it point to? What could the morning sunrise point to? What does the sound of a child's laughter point to? What does the very breath that you breathe point to? What do all the things of creation point to? For I have said unto you before that there is nothing you can create that does not express your longing to awaken. Therefore, all of the doing of the body-mind is but the attempt of the soul to break free of all limitation and to once again rest or recline in that perfect peace, the perfect peace, which is the certain knowledge that only love is real. The yogi in his cave but expresses the longing of that one's soul to recline in creation. The lovers entwined express only the longing of the soul to taste, to touch the reality of love. And love is but God and all of creation, for all of creation is but love. All things then reflect to you through the sensory apparatus of the body-mind the longing of all creation to know with perfect certainty the living presence of the One, whom I have called Abba. In the way of knowing, it must come to pass that the mind is converted from fear to love, from doubt to perfect faith. Perfect faith is not that beginning and intermediate stage in which one is choosing to have faith in things unseen in the hope that they might materialize. For perfect faith casts out all fear. Faith, when purified, when matured, when totally realized, is the same as complete forgiveness. Turn to peace and the knowledge that only love is real. And again, in this work, forgiveness means the dismantling of perception, stepping out of thought and judgment and interpretation and into direct relationship in the moment with the flow of creative energy that we call life. In the way of knowing, it must come to pass that the mind is converted from fear to love. It's converted from doubt to perfect faith. And perfect faith is not that beginning and intermediate stage in which one is choosing to have faith in things unseen in the hope that they might materialize, because perfect faith casts out all fear. And faith, when purified, when matured, when totally realized, is the same as complete forgiveness, or the same as the dismantling of all perception. It is the return to peace and the knowledge by this direct experience that only capital L love is real. Love, beloved friends, is the essence of all that you are. Love is the essence of all that dances as a temporary reflection before the eyes of your very body-mind. There is no one thing, nothing, that you can look upon whose essence is not love. There is nothing you can experience whose essence is not love. So here is the only question. The only question then is, quote, are you willing to make the journey from fear to love as you look upon anything, as you experience any emotion? Close quotes. And that's a toughie. So I look out and I see that one of my loved ones has cancer. Am I willing to look on that from love? Am I willing to look on that as the extension of love in form, whatever form it's taking? I look out and I see that my employer has said, you know, we're not going to need as many people in your department. We're letting you go. Am I able to look on that from love, with love, extending love? The only question is this. Are you willing to make the journey from fear to love as you look upon anything and as you experience any emotion? The text goes on and says, for there can be nothing that obstructs from you the light and presence of your Creator. To perceive the real world of love is to know with perfect certainty that you and your Creator are one. When you remember only your loving thoughts is all that you will see. To remember your loving thoughts, this does not mean that as you look out upon the past, you decide to ignore those thoughts that were less than loving. It means that in truth, you never do look at, quote, the past, close quotes. Rest assured, if you're having a memory now, you're having a very present experience. It is absolutely impossible to think about the past, for thinking occurs now. You will look upon the past as you choose to be in the present. If you're still carrying the effects of less than loving reactions and the perceptions you have made from them, you will continue to see the, quote, past, close quotes, as you always have. Yet, as you look upon the past, if you will choose to be the presence of love first, wanting only to see with the eyes of Christ, there will not be one event you have ever experienced as a soul that is not immediately translated into perfect harmlessness, into the perfect realization that only a dream has occurred. For love looks upon all things and sees that there is no substance to them, except the love out of which those involved in that situation were longing to find a way to know the reality of themselves. Listen carefully here. There is nothing you can experience that is anything but the soul's longing to be the perfection of what it is, and that is love. Everything, your tall skyscrapers, your busy freeways, your armies, all of this is an expression of the longing of the soul, that spark of divinity that rests in all created things, its longing to know love. Has it become distorted? Oh, yes. To think that one can awaken to love, to know love, and to have love by building weapons of destruction? This must be wholly insane. But the longing from which it arises is absolutely no different than the pacifist who would place a flower in the barrel of a rifle. It is no different than the mother who picks up and suckles her newborn baby. The longing is one and the same. This is why I have said often to you that what is not love is fear and nothing else. Fear is merely the contraction that has occurred in the soul that has temporarily lost, the sanity of knowing that it need not seek for love. It need only open and be love. For the attempt to seek love only reveals that sanity is not ruling the domain and the dominion of your heart and soul and mind. Any attempt to get something is insane. Likewise, any attempt to refrain from receiving or giving is also insane. Getting and receiving are not the same. Giving to get is not true giving. Giving and receiving are one. For in either case, the heart must be open. The defenses must be laid aside, and the soul becomes completely vulnerable. Or I would choose the word open, wide open. So for our Western mind, these last two paragraphs are going to be choppy. It's going to take some working with this to understand what they're talking about. So the last two paragraphs again read, this is why I have often said to you that what is not love is fear and nothing else. There is only love or fear. Fear is merely the contraction that has occurred in the soul that has lost temporarily the sanity of knowing that it need not seek for love, the sanity of knowing that it needs only open and be love. For the attempt to seek love only reveals that sanity is not ruling the domain and the dominion of your heart and soul and mind. The attempt to seek love is not sane because you are that substance, that energy, that life force expressing in form. And you need only open and be aware that you are it. Any attempt to get is insane. Likewise, any attempt to refrain from receiving or giving is also insane. So here's a distinction. Getting and receiving are not the same. Getting is this process whereby I think I'm going to complete myself by acquiring something. Receiving is just meaning to be open and allowing. Giving to get is not true giving, right? If I think everything has to be tit for tat, if I give you $5, you've got to turn around and give me back $5 or something worth $5. If I go out of my way and do something nice for you and then I need something, you better turn around and do something nice for me or they're going to be hell to pay. Giving is not true. Giving in order to get something in return is not the true giving they're talking about here. Being open and let things flow out of you and being open and let things flow to you, that's what they mean by giving and receiving here. And giving and receiving, or in other words, being wide open, is the same thing. When you're wide open, your essence flows from you towards others, and their essence flows towards you, and you openly receive. Giving and receiving are one and the same thing. For in either case, the heart must be open, and the defenses must be laid aside, and the soul becomes wholly, totally, completely wide open. They use the word vulnerable here, but I don't think it applies, because who you are, your essence, your soul, cannot be hurt. And vulnerability implies the potential to be hurt. So again, you are not your thoughts about yourself. You are not your ego. Your thoughts about yourself can be hurt. They can be shaken up. Your ego can be hurt. Your ego thinks it can lose, and so it can create the experience of loss. But your true essence can't gain or lose. Nothing of value can be taken from you, and nothing of value can be added unto you. So any attempt to go out and get something that you need is insane. Likewise, any attempt to refrain from receiving or giving is also insane. Getting and receiving are not the same. Getting is this reaching out for something to acquire it and to own it, whereas receiving is just being open and allowing the flow. Giving to get something is not true giving, but giving and receiving, in other words, being open to let what you are flow out from you and being open to let what others share with you arrive in you and land in you, they are one and the same thing. For in either case, the heart must be open. The defenses must be laid aside, and the soul must become completely wide open. The text goes on and says, yet in the perfect paradox of the spiritual journey, when vulnerability is fully allowed through mastery of the keys to the kingdom, and they are again desire, intention, allowance, and surrender, when this is indeed accomplished, love is known. It's experienced directly. For in perfect vulnerability, and here I choose to use the word openness, for in perfect openness, the soul remembers its perfect safety, its perfect wholeness. They use the word invulnerability, but I choose to use the word safety. For in being perfectly open, the soul remembers that it is perfectly safe. The world can do nothing to the one who only extends love. Oh, indeed, beloved friends, the beauty of every flower, the song of every bird that sings, these things are given to you, the holy offspring of creation, the sparkling waters, the vast expanse of the desert. These things are given to you. There is no creation that has within it the capacity that you as a human being possess. Not even your whales and dolphins can truly experience and realize the presence and the mystery of the Creator. They flow in perfect innocence, in creativity, in the Creator's love, but their capacity to reflect, to know, and to embody consciously that which is love, that is not the same as yours. And those that would perceive that seeking out a whale or a dolphin or a wolf or a bear or a crow or what have you, that they think that that will add something to their own nature, they are yet caught up in projecting onto another form of creation that which must be embraced in and for oneself. For the body is the temple of the living spirit, and when it is seen through eyes that have awakened, where you are is where heaven is fully available. That which you are is the love of the Creator made manifest. And when you remember only your loving thoughts, that means that in the very present moment, you are remembering or pulling back together only your loving thoughts. That means in the very present moment, you are remembering, you are bringing the facets of yourself back into the wholeness of the realization that only love is real. For example, quote, yes, my dog just died. Yes, my husband just left me, close quotes. These are just the external forms bouncing about in the field of change. But the essence has not left me, for I am free to extend love. I am free to make the energetic transmission from one set of circumstances into the present moment. I'm free in each moment to abide in love. Not to abide in fear, not to abide in that great fear that I can't possibly survive because my teddy bear has been stolen. And what are the husbands, the mates, the careers, the cars, and the money in the bank, if not the attempt of the little child within you to have and hold on to the teddy bear, the thing that you think can comfort you? Yet, the Christ within you can extend love. In each moment that you seem to be comforted, in each moment that you seem to be confronted with the challenge that brings up within you your deepest fears of security, your deepest fears of managing the estate, the domain that you call your life, these things come not by accident. And they must come without ceasing in a world of unceasing change. For all that you look upon and say that you love, that you perceive as a temporary form of creation, all of it is already dying and dead to you. There can be no peace in the world. But you can be the embodiment of peace when you look out beyond all form and perceive the essence of all things as the longing for love, the longing to remember your true nature as love. When your spouse leaves you, no matter what they say, they're leaving you because they long for love. Does this mean that you have failed them? Absolutely not. For that would mean that they are a victim of you. But you've heard me say to you many times, there is no cause save that which arises within the field of the sovereignty of each soul. Everyone creates their own experience of life. Love is always present, and there is no reason for staying or going. There is only reason to awaken to the voice for love and allow it to move you. So in the world, peace cannot be found. For in the world, there is only the deep belief that love is absent and must be sought, pursued, gotten, extracted from the forms of creation, whether it be a career, a flower, an ocean, a desert, a lover, a mate, or money. The forms of the world contain no reality. By that I mean that when you look at someone or something and the energy of wanting to possess or extract runs you, you're already in insanity. Insanity is completely illusory, which means any attempt to live from that energy can only fail. Yet, at the very same moment, the world awaits you in perfect transparency. Nothing can obstruct you. In the busiest of your malls, in the most horrendous traffic jam, there is nothing that is preventing you from choosing to remember only your loving thoughts. There is nothing preventing you from choosing to look upon a brother or a sister and to see their perfect innocence, to see their unchanging essence, while allowing them to complete the complete freedom to journey as they must until they elect to remember that essence within themselves, until they have chosen to learn to be the stillness of creation's presence. And stillness is not opposed to activity or movement. Rather, that stillness pervades the very mind-body. There is a quality of stillness in the awakened that is ever attractive. And yet, the awakened are ceaselessly involved. Why? Because they no longer resist the flow of this dream world, including the body-mind. They have reversed the thought structure of the world within themselves. The body-mind is no longer compelled by fear. And unobstructed, it serves but one purpose, the extension of love. Think about it. How would it be if you lived your life and your thought was not, well, what's right, what's wrong? Who needs to be rescued? How do I save the environment? How do I get somebody to love me? What if you lived your life from the thought, continually reinforced, continually reinvigorated thought, how can I extend love in this moment? Now, to do that, and to do it with any kind of power and force, I have to take a breath first and remember that my true nature is that energy of love. That this is a miracle that I'm here at all. It's the miracle of life expressing in form that gives me the potential to have a thought, to experience life at all. What would it be like for me to live my life actively asking the thought, how can I extend love in this moment? That's what we're being asked to step into. We're being asked to become aware that what we've been taught by our culture is what this work says over and over again is insane. It is not sanity that we are experiencing. It's illusion. It's the dream of separation. It's a set of conclusions that we don't have this, that we need that, that we're missing this, that that is bad, that that is wrong, that this shouldn't be happening. And so we are constantly called to fight against the flow of life. And teachings like this invite us to step into the questioning of how might we be of service to love, to life in this moment. That, as they've said so many times in different ways, that will change your life. That will wake you up. On a regular basis, we have people who call the show, and they're asking about how do I reconcile this set of teachings with the thought in my head that says these teachings are just telling me to just allow everything and not do anything. And I try to continually, gently come back to the idea and state it in various different ways, that this work is not telling us to just do nothing. This work is asking us to choose a different source for our motivation or our impulse to do whatever it is we do, rather than doing what I'm doing because my mind is telling me the people who have a different color skin are bad or wrong, or that people who have a different philosophy of life are ruining the planet, rather than letting that be the motivation for my next thoughts and words, what if I turned inside and asked, how can I be a blessing to myself and others in this moment? How can I extend love? And then let action flow. We're not being called in this work to sit on the sidelines and do nothing. We're not being told, go into the Himalayas in a cave and sit for many, many years meditating. We're not being told to isolate in our apartment on a meditation pillow. We're being encouraged to live fully in the moment and to let whatever arises in us as a motivation drive our thoughts and behaviors when we ask, how can I extend love in this moment? What's mine to do here to assist in the flow of creation? And please watch if there's any part of your mind that says, well, this is some, you know, pie in the sky, silly, avoid life, go hide in a cave philosophy. Please understand that's the opposite of what we're being called to in this work. It's even said a few times, this is not for wimps. This work is not for people who are running in fear or who won't face their fears. There's a line from the Course in Miracles that says, you may wonder why you need to look upon your deepest hatreds. This is about confronting the negative thoughts and seeing them as false. This is about accepting the challenge to live life differently. This is about accepting the challenge to let the ego serve its very limited role and to take it out of the space of the driver's seat or the master or the deity in our lives. It does, in a certain way, as far as the ego is concerned, ask us to be more comfortable giving up control. At the same time, it calls us to take more responsibility for what we are already empowered to do, which is choice. So we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. How is this landing? What's a thought? What's a comment? What's a question you have? What's an answer you have for us today? As we begin the reading of Lesson 32, how can we support you? Are you one of those people who hears this teaching and hears it as saying, we're not supposed to judge, and that means we're not supposed to take any action, and we're not supposed to do anything for the environment or for the politics? Or if so, let's hear how the last few paragraphs I've talked about are landing for you. Do you see the possibility of staying in motion and being productive and yet allowing and surrendering to all that life has to offer? Or does it still seem like it's a contradiction in terms?
Yes, Celinda here.
Welcome, Celinda.
Hello. I really appreciate what you said the other day about my dream. Well, I'm glad that you can bring that interpretation to it, because it got me thinking and reflecting on the dream, and I came up with two other little interpretations. One was that the dying kitty was the earth, and we are supposed to be the mommies and daddies that are husbanding the earth and having dominion over it, which is, for me, to nurture and nourish it and replenish it and help it regenerate itself. And the other image I got was that that kitten was me, soul, not being taken care of by my ego or the mother and daddy of this illusionary world that I have chosen to be informed. And I just thought I'd share that with you. And also, very quickly, I am so grateful for this Chapter 32 and for everything that I have done in my work, in my life, of my seeking, as the Way of Mastery calls it, to come to this point where I've had several challenges show up in my personal relationships that have shown me exactly the actuality, the truth of this, and that it's time to come up to the plate and practice earnestly extending only the love that I am to the love that all form has within it and is wanting to express. And I just thought I'd share that with you because it's pretty exciting to realize that none of our work is in vain. None of our quote-unquote insanity is in vain, and that the reigning vision of life itself is coming into fruition. And all I need to do is, all I can do and all I have been appointed to do is to get out of the way and be part of the flow and let the flow be what it is. And thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I think that I heard you say in that there's something about what's been happening or you're hearing about on the show that is a help in your personal relationships?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay.
Oh, definitely. As I'm willing to give up the driver's seat, and as I had a personal situation, Larry and I, just over a couple of days with our hosts, and all of that, what you've been talking about, but what the book has been talking about, figuring it out, what Michael says, figuring it out. I think I got a real a gut-level expression or feeling about what that is and how much energy we expend in figuring it out when we're not ready to. It's like the codependence worksheet, codependence, from codependence to co-responsibility or whatever it is, worksheet, where it says you figure it out.
Codependence to interdependence.
Yeah, interdependence, thank you. And I just really got a visual because we spend a lot of energy, a lot of agitation, a lot of trying to figure it out, a lot of trying to see on some level why we are right. And we just were able to give it up. And the meeting was amazing, amazing. So, I'm very grateful.
All right. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's of use to you. I will mute you so you can listen into the second half, and I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. I appreciate it.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, December the 13th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. And I once again invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org. And if you click on the start here or the bullseye, the page that it takes you to, the first two things you'll see are new videos that we have added. One of them walks you through how to navigate the website where you can find what And the second one navigates the app, the forgiveness app. And that's a free download, and we hope that everybody's taking advantage of that. And you can ask questions from any page within the app, and it's there to serve you. We've added a lot of things to it, so if you haven't updated it or downloaded it, I invite you to do that, because there are a lot of new things out there besides the forgiveness worksheet. And, okay, excuse me. We've got Aria, and they dressed up as Grinch today, and she is actually Cindy Lou Lou, one of the little Who's, and looks really cute in her outfit with her hair and everything. So we've got her this afternoon. And so if you have a question, 563-999-3581 and press 1. And it looks like Michael just got in, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael. If you're talking, we can't hear you.
Well, why would I turn my mute button off? Then you'd be able to hear me. Hey, that's... Excuse me. So welcome, everybody. I'm glad that you're here. Glad that we get to continue this 11-year conversation. We're actually... What is it, Jeannie? In January, we go into our 12th year, right?
January 31st.
January 31st. The conversation has lasted 12 years, and it's been a privilege to interact with every person that calls and to offer support to every person that listens. And we've got a couple new... interviews coming online. We did an interview with a medical office in Kingsport, Tennessee, and I think they said they'd post it on Monday, so we'll get a link to it, so we'll make it available. It's a really good conversation about healing. And yesterday did an interview with a young woman in California who is actually contemplating running for president of the United States in 2024. So she's going to be posting that the 1st of January. She's actually starting a blog up, and we're going to be our first guest. And our whole conversation was about first century Aramaic forgiveness. So we'll get that link probably 1st or 2nd of January and
we
be making it available.
We also need to get the book club up, too.
Right, yeah. I wrote to Yinka and haven't heard back from her yet, so I assume she's busy. So... I know they were, and I was surprised to hear it on Saturday. They were having snow in London, England. So the book club is run out of London, England, and Yinka, the leader of it, is part of our Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing group. And so she was sharing that she might have been a little bit late for that breath session because it was snowing in London. I don't know how often it does that. I don't think it's a normal, but... We've got a gorgeous sunny day here in Bristol, Virginia today. It's absolutely beautiful, and I'm full of appreciation for the fact that we get to sit here in Bristol and talk to you wherever you are, whether you're in Australia or New Zealand or Sweden or wherever it is, and that at the same time, when we talk to a person who calls in from New Jersey or Pennsylvania or where have you, within minutes, anybody can download that conversation and get the benefit of it. It's just awesome. And, of course, we've got now just about 11 years of archives. I'm not sure we do, 52 weeks of the year. I'm not sure how many that shows that adds up to, getting close to 4,000 in our archives. So if you miss something, many of those shows have notes, so you can go back and search in the notes and see what your topic is, see what you're looking for. And if you happen to listen to one that doesn't have notes attached, we would much appreciate it. If you would just drop us an email, drop Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, J-E-A-N-I-E at W-H-Y, again, .org. If you drop her a note with some brief notes about what's in the radio show that you listen to, and that way we can... tag them, and people will, you know, be able to search through those notes to see what conversations are topical for them. So, and I can't imagine if we started putting keywords in how many different topics we've addressed, but it has been a multitude in the last 11 years. And so I'm looking forward to what unfolds as the topic for today's show. So, Miss Jeannie, I'll check with you before I launch into anything else. Do we have anybody in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
Nope, it is all quiet. If somebody, you know, I know there were a couple people pressed one like right at the last little bit yesterday, and we were in the middle of a conversation, and so we didn't have time to catch you. So if you'll press one at the start of the show here, it'll be a whole lot easier and more likely to get you in. But right now, nobody has a hand up.
Definitely.
Oh, a hand.
So push one. Let's have a conversation.
So this one, we actually have two hands just went up. So the first one is 541. I believe it's Celinda.
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
I'm fine. I'm good. And you? Whatever you say.
We are rocking.
You
doing
are rocking.
Well. Yep.
We are also over here. I'm sure in our
Celinda,
own unique rocking ways.
We have somebody wants to talk to you for a second, Celinda.
For
me?
Thank you, Cindy, for the gift.
Oh, you're so welcome, sweetheart. My little girl inside of me, little Cindy, always looks for gifts for little girls that I would have liked as a little girl. So I hope they're gifts you really enjoy.
There's two of them that I wrapped and are in her stocking, so she hasn't gotten them yet, but I gave her all of the ornaments, and she hung some of them on her tree in her room and some on their big tree downstairs.
How do you like the little Chinese lantern, Aria?
Good.
It was pretty. She put that on their big tree.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, very good. You be a happy little Grinch creature today.
Yeah.
Oh, she was dressed as a Grinch today.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Or what was the name of the creature she was dressed as for school today?
It was Cindy Lulu that I was today.
Uh-huh. Cindy Lulu.
Wow.
That's one of the residents of Whoville, isn't it, Aria?
Yeah. Did you live in
Whoville? Oh, the Grinch that stole Christmas. I'll go find that book and we'll read it.
Mm. All right.
Cool.
Okay.
So my question for you, Jeannie, and Michael, is I think it was sometime last week you mentioned something you were listening to, I believe, that mentioned about there were 8 different traumas that a child could go through and that 60% of the children in the U.S.
Right.
is estimated to have at least one. Was a link put into that in the show? Because I'm forgetting what show that was, the radio show where you said that. Was there a link available to put into the notes?
I didn't.
It was not.
Like, if you have a link, I'll be sure to put it in.
Oh, okay.
I will see if I can find that link. I'm looking right now. I usually keep links by that, but I'm not seeing it at the moment, so.
Yes, between your show, your and Jeannie's sharings and Dr. Tim's sharings, I am having quite frequent unfolding revelations as to why the dynamics between my daughters and my relationship and why she is so afraid to have anything to do with me because of the past of our codependent relationship that we had. And I was thinking that link, if you can find a link for it where I could listen to it, might be not only insightful for me in relation to my daughter and myself, but also in relation to my upline, my mother and myself, and what my brother is experiencing now. And all of the dynamics of my parents' lives and my grandparents' lives. And it's quite
mind-blowing to make those connections and see how everything is interwoven with everything else. And
for sure.
coming into more allowance and more gentleness within myself, towards myself and others, and how things are, and that feeling myself let go little by little of the grip of fear in me in relation to survival, and more confidence, more trust in that, what Neil Douglas Klotz calls reigning vision of life, that harmony, that plan, that is everything is unfolding perfectly as it needs to unfold. And there's sort of a releasing of tension around all that, which I'm sure another challenge will come along as my energy levels go up. But being able to face my fear now and starting to look at my fear and seeing how I am intricately interwoven in the situation I perceive and how I have helped create it, co-created it. And I just wanted to share that and thank all of you and tell you what a blessing you all are.
Sure. I just did a quick look and I don't see it, but I'll go back through my history of listening and I'll get that. It was actually a physician who was speaking about he was an alcoholic for 20 years and he had gone into recovery, and that became part of his healing process, is recognizing the trauma that he'd been through in childhood. And it's a good presentation. I'll find it. I'll look through my history. I thought I had saved the link, but I didn't. So I'll look through it, and I'll make sure that you get it, and I'll make sure we get it in the notes.
Sounds wonderful. And thank you so much for all you do and all you are, and such a joy that I can share in the exploration you're doing with Aria Rain. And I have one short little aha experience that Larry and I had with the feral cat that we've adopted that showed us how much we could learn as a parent, quote unquote.
Right.
We're in a motorhome, and it's the feral cat, right? And we did not run out to look for her. She showed up and said, "Hello, I have adoptive papers right here in my little paw. Would you please sign them?" And so
right.
We screamed. She was one of three feral cats that are live in the garage of our care hosts. And we have no room for a cat box and no desire for a cat box. So we would shove her outside every night to sleep, and Larry even made a little cat house for her, which all of a sudden she refuses to go in, which she loved before, and we suspect maybe either one of the other cats got in it or a raccoon got in it or something, and she won't have anything to do with it now. So she was screaming at us, literally, when we would put her outside at night. And one night, I was really concerned about how cold it was, and so was Larry. And we had talked about the dilemma, because our temperatures are going down. We're approaching zero, slow slide, and below. And then I looked at each other and I said, what would we do? What could we do if we just trusted her that she wouldn't go to the bathroom in the house, if we just trusted her and just tried it for one night? So I can't believe how long she held her bladder. No lie. So when she screamed at us, we went out and called her. Larry put her in the little chip pile. That's her winter cat box outside the door, and we went inside, and we picked her up, put her inside. She slept all night long and asked to go out in the morning, and we've been doing it for several days now, and there's no problem. It was so
Sweet.
Easy, and when we insisted on our way, and I thought, oh, my goodness, if I had just had that insight when I was raising my daughter and my son. And then I say, now, Celinda, process goes in an orderly fashion. Stop beating yourself up.
Good catch.
Yeah, Larry tells me I beat myself up a lot, so I'm starting to pay attention now.
Nice. Nice. Well, we support you treating yourself lovingly, gently, and with respect. Do you have a copy of the first person commitment to use in the mirror?
Yes, I do, and the revision.
Good.
But were you ever able to finish your editing or revision of the loving commitment towards self? Or did you decide to just leave it the way it was?
I'm thinking that I looked at it and decided that I wanted to keep it the way it was. But you're certainly
perfect.
Welcome to make any edit that you choose to.
Thank you. That's perfect. And I don't care which. It was just a suggestion. And I'll go back and look at mine, too, because I may decide now. You know, I go back like the poem I sent you, Awake. I'd like to send you a revision because I now have it to where I feel like it's the Aramaic gospel in a nutshell.
Sweet, awesome.
I sent you a revision of that, too. So thank you. That's all I have to say. So I'll go back and look at that. Play with that, because I was just waiting, thinking you were going to have a revision out. No problem. Not necessarily
right.
mine, but I mean just a
cool.
revision. So now
yep.
I know. Cool beans. Well,
right. And one of the things that you'll probably find.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that one of the things you'll probably find as you work through those childhood traumas, you know, when we're in that fear, flight, fright, freeze mode of threat, literally blood flow in order to support the need to fight or run, the blood flow to anything to do with thriving, regeneration, healing, digestion, reproduction, the blood flow is cut off from those places, including the higher centers of the brain. So as you work through those things, you literally restore blood flow to those higher centers of the brain. And all of a sudden, new insights wake up. New parts of the brain wake up that have been really, quite literally, been asleep. And the insights that come through those, you know, when I look at the brain, people think of, oh, the brain does this, the brain does that. I don't believe the brain does anything. They say the brain does. What the brain does is it's an instrument for the expression of who we are. And the higher faculties of the brain have to be available for the higher insights and the higher expressions of who we are to come through this form. They're just instruments. They're not the source of the faculty or the capacity. They're instruments of it. And so as you know, let loose of the fear-based thoughts, the hostility-based thoughts towards self, part of moving out of sympathetic dominance into the parasympathetic system restores blood flow to not only different parts of physiology that allow us to rest and digest, reproduce and regenerate, but also the higher faculties. So you're probably, I think that's part of what happens when I do something today and then a year from now I go back and go, wow, oh man, I can upgrade that. It's like literally we're, as we do our work, we're opening blood flow to higher parts of the brain and therefore higher functions of mind. So it's a pretty cool system when you understand it.
Yes, I have come to view the brain itself as the physiological hardware, and that mind is right. It's sort of like I think you were mentioning, or someone was mentioning on something I heard, that the scientists have not really been to target, have been able to locate where the mind is at all. I think this, I might have read this somewhere too. They can't find the mind in the body. It's just not there. And so I think of that as the programmer. And that, to me, is energy. It's like you were talking about the word becoming flesh being the mind energy, the of life itself, and source, creator. And that just channels me right into whole person. Let's don't get locked into either the right or the left, because I read a book once called The Black Butterfly, and I don't even remember who wrote it, but he was a psychiatrist, I think. And he found out that all his patients generally fell into two categories. One was schizophrenia and the other was cancer. The other was cancer. And he came to the tentative conclusion that schizophrenics were lost in the labyrinth of their right brains, and cancer people were lost in the labyrinth of their left brain. And he came to the conclusion he'd rather be a schizophrenic, Michael. I guess that was pretty funny. But he had more rapport with those who had schizophrenia than he did with those who were in the throes of the deep, deep resentments of their cancer. Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, I wanted to also share one tool with you that I found very helpful along with the Aramaic tool. And that is Louise Hay, who I have profound respect for. And
she has some great stuff.
I know. And I have her Love Your You Can Heal Your Body and You Can Heal Your Life both. And
right.
So she says there was one image that when she's having a really difficult time with someone, she takes that person and she envisions that person as a little tiny child and throws that person into her heart, you know, tucks it into her heart.
Mm.
And then she takes herself as the same something between 3 and 5 and tucks that her little self into that heart with the other person. And both of them are crying and in pain and sobbing, and she just enfolds them in her heart center. Heart math would love this, wouldn't it? Actually, enfolds them, anybody. And she says, you know, it can get real, real crowded in there. But they all go in, and she just lets them be there and lets them be. And it's sort of a variation of being able to see other people's pain beyond their hostility,
right.
Beyond
empathy.
Their fear. Empathy. Yeah. Yeah.
And on that idea of finding the mind, they're never going to find the mind, because they're looking for a thing, and the mind is not a thing. The mind is a function. You know, they're never going to cut a body open and find digestion. Digestion is a function of the tissue of the gut. It's not a thing. It's a function. And in the same way, the mind is a function of the cells of the body. It's not a thing. And that's why they're not going to find one. And it's the and that mind functions throughout every cell in the structure. Every cell functions to store information. And when something comes along that resonates, content of the cells, and doesn't matter whether it's in the big toe or the kneecap or the heart or the liver or the lung, that all goes into contributing the constructs of the mind, the reflection of that function that we call perception. And, you know, that's why the forgiveness process is so important, because when you know how to collapse that function back into its root, you get to look at the hidden and the unconscious parts of the structure, and that's where healing happens, because bringing those parts to the active presence of love creates the dissolution of the content that never belonged in the structure in the first place.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful way of stating it for me, because I perceive of the mind as energy, not matter. And so that's a real helpful, because for me, the function, it either functions or it dysfunctions, depending on who's in charge. You know, is it the ego part of me that's usurped its role and usurped the role of the master? which is that soul part of me. I'm just so, yeah. I mean, I know I'm making metaphors here, and I'm never going to be able to perceive all truth, but I have these little metaphors that help me make a bridge for me. Yeah.
And
there's,
I think,
also,
that the...
Go ahead.
My take would be that there's never been such a thing as a dysfunctional mind. It's, the mind is always functioning perfectly. It's just reflecting content. And it's when the content is of a disintegrative nature, energies that don't belong, energies that are off the mark, that people do crazy, what we call crazy, bizarre things. And their minds are working perfectly. It's just that the content of the structure is off the mark. It doesn't support sanity. Mind's working, you know, very fine, very, very well. There's content there. It resonates, bang, a perception results from it. When we realize that any time that the mind is using corrupt data, that is, there's hostility or fear, and choose to collapse that function by removing the driver that causes it to show us what it shows us, that's when we get to drop into directly into the data that's off base, that needs correction. And once again, when exposed to love, that corrupt data is automatically transmuted and healed.
So would that be the program, kicking out the programmer?
The programs, yeah.
Over the driver's seat? Sort of like, here, let me, the robot, drive the bus.
Yes. That's it. When the automatic decision system takes over, we're in trouble, unless all of the information in the structure is perfectly aligned with truth. And I haven't seen anywhere where that's happened yet. So yeah, driving the bus, having automatic decisions and drive the buses leads to great trauma and insanity. And fortunately, it's all correctable.
Well, hopefully we're all wearing boots with giant bootstraps so we can lift each other up in love, in the extension of the love that we are, when the other needs it or when we need it. There are just, so may huge bootstraps live.
That's a great metaphor for that. And you know, it's interesting that a lot of the political world says, oh, you know, these poor people don't need help. Just let them pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But the policies created by those politicians make sure that from birth, the bootstraps are cut to zero for certain people, and make sure that there are no bootstraps to be gripped, to be lifted up by. And that's another piece of the insanity of the corrupt data in the mind.
That's the either or program, survival program operating, instead of the this and that of you got to have bootstraps and you got to lift yourself up too and lift the other up too. It's a co-creative process. We're all interconnected. And that's why I take that's the one thing about the Buddhist path that I really like. That middle road, I'm going right down the middle, Michael. This and that, living in the paradox, being open, wide open, as Dr. Tim says it in the Way of Mastery. So anyway, I just wanted to share with you how exciting life is becoming, and maybe someday I'll have a silly expression on my face for no good reason. Wouldn't
there you
that
go.
Be sweet? You take care.
All right. Have a blessed one. Lots of love.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's interesting that there's some of the recent research I've been looking at, and they're saying that the person who can embrace the paradox, the seeming opposites, the seeming conflicted information, and this is some pretty hard, you know, research that they've done, that's where real creativity happens. The individual that can embrace that paradox and be with it rises to a new level of creativity. So we're here to support that. And so, Miss Jeannie, Do we have any other hands up? You had another hand, I believe.
We did, and they have now disappeared. So if someone presses one, you are next in line with no waiting.
So whoever had your hand up a few minutes ago, if you want to raise your hand, we can carry on with the conversation. If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, we'll be having a conversation. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581.
Well, it's all quiet.
Okay, well, let's move into a conversation about whether or not we live from the mind and our emotions, or whether we live from a state of being. You know, emotions are a reflection of energy resonating in carbon-based memory. And if the mind is, or can be, in an instant state of hostility or fear, it's because that mind has been tyrannized with mind energy that doesn't belong in it. And the mind that's been tyrannized tends to become a mind that tyrannizes others. So the options are, we're either living from the light and the love that flows underneath all of creation, the love that's designed to power our minds, or we're living from the thought disorders of generation upon generation and generation of tyranny. To be restored to our rightful place in our own temple, our own body-mind unit, is to be freed from the impact of the corrupt data of thought disorders and to literally have not only our physiology fueled, but our thinking and our emotions fueled by conscious, active, present love. The difference between the two is night and day. One mind is going to be in survival, in fear mode, in sympathetic dominance, which means they're ready to fight at the drop of a hat. They go into freeze. They'll just shut down, literally, because blood flow to the brain stops. It's not that someone has a choice when they are in action. People say, well, why didn't you just do something? If there wasn't enough blood flow to the brain to fuel activity, then that state is freeze mode. Literally, behavior is frozen. You know, if we listen to the physicists tell us that matter doesn't exist, but that what we call matter is light energy solidified. And so underneath all of what we think of as the material world, what our eye detects as the material world and material substance, is simply a reflection of the organized light behind it. If that light energy is cut off from love, then disconnected, that system is winding down and therefore dying. It's governed by the rule of entropy. However, if one stays connected to that presence of love, that light that's underneath the surface, then a different rule of physics governs, and it's not entropy anymore, the winding down, it's ectopy, going to higher and higher states, because those higher states exist in the dimension of that energy in which we live, move, and have our being, that energy which is love. And so the forgiveness process becomes so important because it allows us to collapse those energetic patterns that would leave us in entropy and therefore falling apart, heading toward death, and restore us to ectopy, the continuous upward motion into higher and higher states of organizations, higher and higher expressions of the being, of the truth of who we are. You know, Susan had a, and I had a conversation the other day about, you know, this idea of eternal life. And that to live eternally means that we're eternally connected to the active presence of love and therefore continuously being fueled by love, which uplifts the system into higher and higher states. Whereas when we lose contact with that, this is a conversation we have going with Arya right now, and actually found a perfect picture somebody had posted on Facebook, and it's a dove, you know, flying off and flying out of a person's hand, and underneath and out of the hands of these comes the light that holds the dove in place. And it was a perfect way for her to understand, you know, we've been having a conversation with her about, you know, our minds generate these pictures that we think are things, but they're all really just energy. And to stay, while we live in this world of structure, perception, constructs of the mind, to remember that behind it, underneath it all, beneath and superior to that, is the active presence of love, and that we have the ability to stay connected there. It seems that the specialty of the world, and I think it's because generation upon generation of abused adults pass without malice or intent, just the fact that that's what's in them. You know, if some sort of hostility or fear starts to resonate, the tendency will be to turn that into language, to turn that into energy, and turn it on whoever's present. And if the child is the one that's present, then the child, you know, if they're in the receptive place where a power person dynamic is possible, then their energy field's open and just take on that energy. And now, quote unquote, the sins of the parents, the father and the mother, are passed on to the next generation. And if you remember that passage in the scriptures, it's really very profound. As it says, the sins, and remember the word sin is just an archery term that means off the mark. The energetic errors, the patterned errors of the generations will be passed, yea, unto three and four generations, it says. And then it's followed by a comma and says, of those who hate me. Who is it that's talking to us there? And are they talking about hate as in a love-hate relationship? My offering is that's a direct piece of information from the Creator in which we live, move, and have our being, from the love in which we live, move, and have our being. And the word there in Aramaic, hate, isn't hate as in a love-hate relationship, but rather those who are separated from the ability to make the connection to love are stuck with their genes for advice. They're stuck with the world of structured perception, the world of matter. Which means, you know, when you realize that perception can only reflect what's in tissue, and what's in tissue obviously has to be in tissue before it reflects. Therefore, by definition, everything that shows up as perception is from the past. So here's love, the Creator, saying, if you are separated, if you are not connected to this presence of love in your life, if you've bought into the generational patterns of rage and hate and fear and sadness and abuse and correction and condemnation and judgment and gossip and slander from the presence of love, and how much more incredible how much sweeter, how much more beautiful life becomes when we have our perception fueled by active love rather than some form of generational pattern of hostility and fear. Quote unquote, literally, the sins, the energetic patterns of the fathers that are off the mark. Of course, that implies mothers too. So to bring forward the active presence of love, to reconnect from love rather than hate love, be separated from love, is to bring forward the ability to transmute everything in your structure, no matter how many generations have been, you know, have exited from the condition of love in their lives. You look at the fact that, you know, researchers are telling us that these 8 abuses that have taken place in humanity, that over 60% of people in America have been raised with that. Like, how bizarre is that? And it's time for us to awaken those higher centers, be restored to our connection to love. And, you know, restoring yourself to that connection of love is not something you can do through effort. It's not something you can do by force. It's something that is achieved via forgiveness. When you remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, then there is a space for active love to show up in your physiology, to show up in your mind, to show up in your relationships. Rather than if you're in a particular situation that your generational patterns call for rage, rather than the projection of rage from the genes into the perception of this moment. That we need to be collapsing what never belonged. And what never belonged in the human experience is any form of hostility or fear. Yet you look at what's going on in the world and you think hostility or fear was the order of the day. But when hostility or fear is running the system, it literally eradicates human life. And our objective here is to restore human life, to restore it to the truth of who we are. If you live from a mind that regularly tells you that you're mad, sad, afraid, or upset because of something happening outside of you, recognize that emotion is the end result of a thought, and only a thought within you can produce that emotion. So recognizing that you're never upset because, you know, Harry did this or Mary did that or Hortense did this, you're upset because there's upset in you, whatever the quality of upset is. When you can get out of the long-standing errant religion of blame, the one world religion, when you get out of that religion of blame and step into ownership and responsibility, then you've given your mind permission to show you the underlying dynamics. So an emotion is nothing that but a resonant energy that comes out of, and if I shut down a thought, if I dissociate from a thought, I literally create a coiled energy in me that will energetically draw to me the experience consistent with that thought. So emotion is an information signal that informs of the mind energy that form the quality of our creative process. Emotions are the reflection of a particular quality of energy moving within your field. And these emotions and thoughts kind of get cooked together, like, you know, if rage and sadness and hate and fear and depression and anxiety are all cooked together, there's such a complex there, it seems unresolvable. And to recognize you can't uncook them. But what you can do is you can forgive them. You know, the mind tries to uncook those end results by trying to figure it out. I don't care what you do, you can't figure it out. The complexity of those energetic patterns is so deep that there's no figuring it out. But at any given moment, you can apply forgiveness to it, collapse it, and start to undo it. So whenever complex of feelings come up, notice that it's always related to a goal that you have for whoever it is you're blaming for those feelings. And when you realize that and you start to cancel or let go of the goals that you hold, that's when the energy pattern starts to fall apart. That's kind of like the glue that when you remove it allows it to fall apart. You know, if you create a stew, can't, after the stew's made, take the carrot flavor away from the celery flavor, the celery away from the bay leaf. You can't do it. But as each thought that creates the complex that's being dealt with is exposed to love, it changes. And so that's what we're working toward with this forgiveness tool. That's what happens. Clarity starts to come to the mind. And so what we're looking to do is bring clarity to the mind and connectedness to active present love rather than connectedness to all kinds of emotions. Forgiveness collapses the end result perception that's made up of the mind energy that is the root of all pain. And as the goal that drives that pained perception is unearthed and forgiven, the pain perception itself collapses. When the underlying pained thought comes forward in the presence of active love, it dissolves. That's all. So hopefully that fits and makes sense. And if you're out there in listener land and you have a question or a thought about it or about the tools, push one. Let's have a conversation about it. Machine, do we have anybody out there in listener land with a question for us? Hand up. Or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. Somebody press one. We have 10 minutes.
Let's go for it. Let's have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Is there something about the conversation I just presented that you go, well, wait a minute, what about? Or that doesn't make sense. Then let's hear your questions or your thoughts. If you need some support with applying the tools, clarification on the tools, push one. Let's have a conversation. Great. Let's say hello.
610, it's Miss Susan. Welcome.
Again. Yes. Okay.
Hey, young lady. Welcome.
Well, thanks. Good talk, Michael. You said something just a few seconds ago. It is not a matter of will. You have to go through the forgiveness process. Forgiveness.
Will can take you to doing the forgiveness process, but will won't correct the mind.
Yeah. How did you word it? Can you possibly dredge that up? I know it's too much to ask, but I've been thinking about the tremendous urge in me, and I know it's true for others, to be on the right side of an argument or basically that, to be right. And if I'm right, then I'm judging the other person, and I'm on the other side of the universe, and I've gone right out of grace into the darkness. It's a very strong urge.
Yeah, I think being right is also motivated by the power person dynamic, where having been made wrong, punishment naturally follows, where the parent believes that rather than teaching the child properly, which is the mm-hmm. definition of discipline, the parent thinks that discipline means, you know, we need to hit this child, beat this child into submission.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the avoidance of being labeled as wrong and therefore being beaten or degraded or, you know, put down, what have you, all the different dynamics that, that happen in that world, you know, embarrassment mm-hmm. and such. And so those energies, when they surface in perception, if a forgiveness is applied, then they're dissolved. And when that motivation to avoid those things disappears, then all of a sudden the motivation to be right, the need to be right, is gone.
Taking a big breath. Well, I can certainly own how much of a challenge this is for me, but it seems to be quite common in our culture too, which is what you were talking about. We were raised or reared in this way that it's ended up being having a pile of polarized people.
So, yes.
Yeah, okay. I have been, as you know. Go ahead.
You know, there's a line in the chorus, you know, that basically says, would you rather be right or love?
Uh-huh. I
and
know.
That
That's wonderful.
Sums a lot of it up, because we give up functioning as a human being in order to be right so that we won't be, in many cases, so that we won't be attacked. I think in many cases
right.
it's not so much the judgment of another. It's more the avoidance of, oh, my God, I'm going to be condemned if I'm not right. So there's that addiction to being right, no matter how ridiculous the argument is. And what I've noticed the mind does is it will take a scenario, like it'll make a statement. And the statement, in the context of the actual facts of the situation, is ridiculous. But then the mind will go ahead and make up whatever it needs to. It will pretend to have observed a fact that supports the conclusion, no matter how ridiculous the conclusion is and no matter how ridiculous the statement is. But the mind will just instantly, and I think this is all based in the avoidance of punishment, the avoidance of shame, the avoidance of being put down, the avoidance of being controlled, that the mind just, you know, it'll say something ridiculous, like, you know, let me think of an example. So, gee, nothing's coming to mind at the moment, but just something that just isn't true. And then it will follow with a justification that's just something totally, completely fabricated, has nothing to do with the truth, but it avoids that idea of being wrong and maintains the illusion of being right, because look, I just stated a fact and it supports what I just said, even though if I look at the truth, what I just said was ridiculous, and so is the so-called fact that I just made up to support it. I mean, the mind
right.
just makes up crap.
I wish you could think of an example. I think I know what you're saying, but what comes to mind is I spoke about a friend, the husband of a good friend of mine, and I wanted to stop a certain kind of conversation that he wanted to keep having with me. So I said
right.
to him, why don't we, because I know we differ on some other issues and we could have some really, because I trust he's a very smart guy, but I'd love to hear what you think about various issues. One of them is abortion. And he's very conservative, and I'm sort of middle-of-the-road, cautious liberal on that issue. nobody likes the idea of abortion, but we've had the best discussion because he's done a lot of research on how developed the fetus is in the womb, what they can feel and what they can't, at what points, and so on. I have not changed my position, but I've become so much softer on it and more, it's as if love could come in, because I see in his case, they weren't ridiculous arguments. They were really good arguments. And,
right,
and he
solid.
Said the same on my side. He said, my God, I hadn't thought of that and I hadn't thought of this. I tend to think of the people on the planet who may be, you know, not wanting the child, too young for the child, maybe ill or unable to take care of the child. The child needs a better chance than that. Therefore, abortion might be warranted. I don't want to get into a political discussion on the radio show.
Right.
Point where I felt as if I truly respected him and he truly respects me. And
right.
I was wishing that we could do this in the whole world with every single issue, because I bet you we could find common ground if he would just have enough love to open up enough to have those discussions. Instead, we just take sides and get behind our right. wall.
If there wasn't a deep need to be right, that would happen.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And I could easily imagine. Go ahead.
No, I mean, go ahead. Just that's. I think you're about to say something you need.
Well, I was going to say that I think that the abortion discussion, to a great degree, is a big distraction in the culture from the real issue. And the real issue, I think, is the pro-life issue, and that is that we create. I think if two people who had the discussion you were just describing on both sides of that issue were to join and go to their legislatures and go to their city councils and go to, you know, the people in the culture and create a true pro-life culture.
Absolutely.
Then the need for abortion, I mean, if you look at how, you know, if you go back and look at the slavery, they were an extremely pro-birth culture.
Mm-hmm.
The slave owners were pro-birth. Have as many babies as you can because a lot of them are going to die and we're going to mistreat them and we're not going to feed them properly and we're going to be as anti-life as you can possibly be. So we need lots of babies. And I think that mindset is what keeps the pro-birth conversation going, which really isn't pro-life at all, because if there were an actual pro-life culture, there would be health care for every woman in the culture who gets pregnant, and there would be insurance,
right.
And there would be coverage, and there are just a thousand things that are really truly anti-life but pro-birth.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
I think,
you know,
both sides of that conversation will come together and address the real issue, which is creating
yeah.
a whole political, economic, medical system that is truly an educational system that is truly pro-life.
Yeah.
Supports actual life.
Right. Well, we came to that. He said, this is what we need, and we both agreed, so it was great.
Sweet.
You know,
awesome.
So anyway, yeah. So anyway, I know we're at the end of time, but anyway, thanks for the discussion.
If you look at the first on my Facebook page, if you look at the
mm-hmm.
first post, it's pinned there. It's the
mm-hmm.
conversation about pro-birth versus pro-life. You might
uh-huh.
want to have a look at that, and if you have any thoughts, any
yeah.
feedback on it, I'd love to hear it.
Oh, and I listened
cool.
to that that heart-brain connection thing and did the meditation. That's phenomenal stuff. Greg Braden.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. And Pat
awesome.
Adams, I sent it to my son. Oh, my God. The Patch Adams thing
nice.
Is amazing.
Patch Adams. Yeah, that was a great
yeah.
talk, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who knows?
Okay.
One mind at a time, we get converted to love.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thanks, Michael. Thanks, Deanie.
All right, dear heart. You have a blessed day. Tell Tim we said hello and send
thanks.
Our love. Bye-bye.